You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Joining us now, he is part of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, regular voice on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's Michael Bumpus. Hey, Mike, how are you?
What's up? How you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. Previewing this Sunday night game, obviously. We had our bold take Friday predictions. I'm almost afraid to repeat mine because I'm being absolutely torn apart, but I'm not ashamed of it. It's that the Seahawks secondary would outperform New England's secondary on Sunday. Jake, ooh. I don't really remember yours. It wasn't that bold, but what was it?
It was the fact that although the Seahawks run defense is the weakness, and you know that the Patriots are going to try and pound the rock versus the Seahawks. I believe the Seahawks are going to hold the Patriots running game to under 100 yards rushing. That's my bold take.
Okay.
Okay. So I won't put you on the spot and have you share your bold take Friday prediction yet, unless you have it.
Okay.
But
yeah, I got it. Let's do it.
Oh, okay. I'm ready. Let's go. Bump.
I'm going to say my bold take is that Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde will combine for 125 rush yards.
Woo! You like to see that. You like to see that. Now, would that be your kind of attack? One of the debates that we had in 1245 between Jake and I is whether or not you continue to air it out. Obviously, we both really liked seeing the way that they passed last week. Not just passing more per se, but when they chose to do that. There were an equal amount of attempts in the first quarter and the fourth quarter, which you don't normally see last year. I know that the expectation is they're going to run more this week, but is that what you would do? Is that how you'd attack this Patriots defense?
You know, honestly, I would start with the run just because the Patriots watch film, right? They watched that Atlanta game. They saw what Russell Wilson did throwing the football. So you would have to think they spent a little more time throwing the playing against the pass. Now, the Seahawks are known for the run game. They have 2,000-yard rushers. They have a revamped offensive line. Let's not be fooled. They're still going to run the rock. That's still part of who they are. I think they just took advantage of a weaker secondary. This week, I mean, you got Gilmore, you got Phillips, you got guys who can play. And this New England defense is going to man up. They're going to be aggressive. So what do? You run the football to loosen them up. So I think that the Hawks are going to get back to who they've been traditionally. I still think that they're going to throw the football. I still think they're going to be explosive. But I would attack this defense by running the rock.
Now, Bump, I saw that you did a breakdown here for the Seahawks and that you've been doing a game preview of the upcoming week's opponent. I saw that you were doing one versus the New England Patriots. What was that about?
Jake, the main takeaways was that offensively, Cam Newton is a runner. He's going to read that defensive end or that last man on the line of scrimmage, depending on who it is. Sometimes it could be Jamal. And he's going to try to make the defense wrong. He's going to put them in a bind. And then after that, he's going to set up the RPOs. Julian Edelman is going to work the middle of the field. They're going to try to get guys to get their eyes in the backfield and really try to step up. This offense is not a big play offense. They don't have that downfield threat. They're still waiting on N'Keal Harry maybe to be that guy. So in the meantime, they're going to work with what they got. And what they do have is a mobile quarterback, two running backs who can get it done in White and Burkhead, and they have a former Pro Bowl slot receiver in Julian Edelman. Edelman's not going to have an 80-yard play, 60-yard play. That's not what he does. It doesn't mean he's not a good ball player. He's going to work the middle. He's going to work the zones and just be available. So I think they're going to try to set up the long, sustaining drives, 10 to 12 play drives. That's the style of football I'm seeing, Jake.
Now, Bump, you talk about lack of weaponry or guys that you should be afraid of on the outside. Does that lend to this secondary having a better game? Is this the perfect next step or the next game that they could have after a week one game where they kind of struggled a little bit on the back end? They faced some really difficult playmakers, no question. But now they're going to – do you think that they'll be more aggressive in their approach? And I'm thinking more about Quentin Dunbar than anything else because he was so conservative in taking his chances at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, Jake, I think they are. I mean, Julio Jones had 157. Calvin Ridley had 130. Russell Gage had 114. I mean, that's probably the best trio in the NFL after week one, and we'll see how these guys hold up. So with the lack of weapons on the outside, you would expect him to be a little more aggressive. I just watched a film breakdown Paul Moyer did on Quentin Dunbar and how he's not a real aggressive corner. He likes to play around. When he bumps, it's around 3 yards. So I don't expect him to be at the line of scrimmage being really aggressive, but I do expect them to tighten up the coverage a little bit. When you play against a team who wants to run the football and who doesn't have guys who are threats on the outside, make them one-dimensional. If this secondary and Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers and Dunbar can walk up to the line of scrimmage and lock these guys down and make this team one-dimensional, that's going to help this defense. This is going to be a big boy type football game. You know, it's not going to be – last week was 7-on-7. You know, Matt Ryan's throwing the ball 50 times. This week, KJ, Bobby, Irvin, they're going to have to step up and make some tackles. How do you help those guys make the tackles? You lock them down on the outside. That's what I think they're going to do.
Now, very related question, Bump. You know that I love the questions where I have you fill in the blank on a sentence. You hate them. I love them because you always do provide some awesome insight. So, very related, but I'm going to go ahead and throw it your way anyways. The Seahawks beat the Patriots on Sunday night if blank.
The Seahawks beat the Patriots on Sunday night if they control the line of scrimmage. Puna Ford, Jay Reid on that defensive line, they have to stalemate. They can't get pushed back. They have to fill those gaps and allow Bobby Wagner and KJ to go to work. That line of scrimmage is going to be crucial. And you occupy the gaps and allow Bobby to scrape down and have 10 to 12 tackles. So if Puna and Jay Reid can stalemate at the line of scrimmage, I think the Hawks got this.
Now, Michael, what is maybe one, you know, underlying factor, maybe a guy that you think that isn't maybe a marquee player, but this guy has to step up? You mentioned the two defensive tackles. Who's an X factor in this game?
LJ. I mean, he got his first start last week. To me, he's still a rookie. He's only played probably around 200 snaps now in his career. But LJ has to be a guy. You know, I spoke about those defensive ends being disciplined and making Cam wrong. LJ is going to be a big part of that. Now, for him to be successful, he might not even have a lot of tackles. All I want those ends to do is to play big. Don't bite. Mm-hmm. Make Cam make the decision. Are you going to hand it off? Are you going to run it? When they guess, when they make a decision for Cam, that's when they're going to be successful. So I need LJ to fire off the edge and just be big. Get into your stance, get low, make Cam make a decision, and then you react and make a play.
Now, Michael, from what you've watched from Cam Newton week one, do you think Cam Newton is fully back, fully healthy right now? Is he as big of a threat as he has been in the past, or is this the Patriots making the most out of what Cam Newton has to offer?
You know, I think he's healthy, but I also think that he is not he's at a point in his career where he needs to take the next step. Like, who are you going to be, right? He's 30, 31 years old. So I think he's healthy, but I think the Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick are trying to figure out how he can be most successful. And it looks like he's going to be most successful running the ball earlier. Now, I think that as the season goes along, they're going to open up the playbook. There's a couple of times where he got out and empty and threw the rock. And when I watch him, Jake, he doesn't seem like a guy who's comfortable going through all of his reads. There was a play where they were in empty, and we call it an Oregon concept on the left side. There's a speed out by the slot and a goal by the outside guy. And then backside had a tight end running a seam. It was a one high look, probably cover three. When you see cover three, you love working the seams. But I just saw a guy who said, look, I'm just going to take my first read right now. I'm not going to move the safety and work the seam. It's first and 10. They're in the red zone. I'm not going to take a shot. I'm just going to go what I know is going to be there. So, you know, I think he's healthy. I think he's ready to go. But I think that they're still – him and Josh McDaniels are still dating. They're still feeling each other out, texting each other at night.
Romantic.
You know, the honeymoon Love phase. It. They're not taking any risk right now. They're feeling each other out. So he's healthy, but They still have some growing to do in that offense.
You got
to
build that trust. The Seahawks just released their injury report for Sunday night. Cedric Abuehi is doubtful with a pec injury. That was the case last week. Defensive end Rasheem Green on here is doubtful with a neck injury. He left the game with what was called a shoulder injury, then returned. Pete Carroll said he had some tests on that injury on Wednesday. He has not practiced this week. Now officially doubtful. Who does that pressure fall on this week should Rasheem Green be inactive?
Goodness gracious, Rasheem Green inactive. I mean, it's LJ and Ben and Benson. LJ and Benson. You still got DeMontre Moore we haven't seen much of. Alton Robinson's going to be there. But it still falls on the starters. And LJ started for a reason. Rasheem Green led the team in sacks last year, but they saw something in LJ this offseason and this training camp that allowed him to be the starter. So I don't think it changes the starting situation. I think now the pressure falls on the guys behind them, and that's DeMontre Moore and Alton Robinson.
So, Bump, after we talked with you about all this stuff, what do you think is going to be the style of game that you see? And what is the – I hate doing score predictions, but what kind of score do you think
we're
going to see?
Bump, what exactly will happen?
What exactly will happen? I'll tell you what one thing is going to happen. The Hawks are going to come out fired up, ready to go. They impressed me with their ability to get going on the road with no fans out there. Now, I think the identity of this game is going to be a slugfest, honestly, because I think that with Stephon Gilmore on the outside locking things down, it's not going to be as wide open as it was against the Atlanta Falcons. And then you still have Phillips as well, who's a pretty good DB out there. So I think it's going to be one of those Dave Wyman games, one of those old school, heavyweight, low scoring, just, you know, type of rough games.
And salivating. I think that's the type he's salivating right now, Bumpus.
You already know. He's loving it. He probably has his helmet on right now. Dave is always ready to go. But, you know, it's going to look different. And I think that's the type of game that the Hawks need. Because now, say, they put this on film, right? Okay, we can play the spread them out 35 times. And then we can play the big boy football. I mean, preparing for this team is going to be a headache after this, you know? So I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be a heavyweight bout. I think Chris Carson's going to have some plays. I think Cam's going to make some plays. But it all comes down to who's fundamentally sound, who's going to wrap guys up, who takes care of the football.
Bump, you are the best. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, guys, have a good one.
You too.
Yep,
let's
you
get
too.
To four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, Jake, what will be the biggest challenge for the Seahawks, and what matchup makes you the most nervous?
A very easy question for me right here. The biggest challenge for the Seahawks is going to be limiting Cam Newton and the Patriots running game. This is going to be a tremendous challenge because they have a lot of different ways that they could run the football. QB power, RPO, zone read, fly sweeps. You got Rex Burkhead, who's a guy that they use in a variety of different ways in the toss game and in fly sweep motions. You've got Sony Michel, their former first round pick, a guy who can run, you know, downhill at you. So when you look and prepare for this team from a run stopping standpoint, it's very difficult. And here in cut number two, Pete Carroll kind of talking about that challenge of what New England wants, what they want to do, and how it looks like with Cam Newton under center.
The Patriot team ran the ball 42 times and threw it 19 times. You know, that's a, now they've done that at times rarely, but not with Tom Brady that often. And so there's a difference in that commitment right there. And they've got a quarterback that's got extraordinary talents, and they're, you know, they utilized him, and they've got themselves really a very, very commanding win.
And because they were able to get that commanding win, to me, I look at this defensive line, who I've always thought that they were going to struggle against the run. That maybe they might be better in pass rushing situations, but they are not built to last and withstand because of the lack of depth and just kind of who they have at the defensive end's position. So I'm very, very curious to see how this group can step up against a very difficult challenge, and it's going to attack their weakness right from the get-go.
Second down. Stacy, which Seahawk has a chance for a breakout week two?
You know, my number one pick was initially Carlos Hyde. I say that because I think that Pete Carroll really loves the way that Chris Carson can be involved with the pass game. This was an overlooked point that we didn't talk about enough this past week, Jake, but that one-handed catch Chris Carson had right near the sideline was beautiful. It was fantastic. Yes. He's got great hands. I would love to see him get more touches this week, but I'd also love to see him remain a part of that pass game also. I wouldn't even mind if his touches were split between receptions and carries. He is their best running back, but I'm very curious to see what they have in Carlos Hyde. I think they're curious to see what they've got in Carlos Hyde, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up getting more touches potentially, or at least got some of those goal line carries, right? So I think I'm expecting a big breakout game for him, finally getting to see what you've got there in your running back group with Penny on the PUP list. And I think that's kind of my main guy. The second one, with this news that Rashim Green is doubtful with a neck, I'm going to call like a neck slash shoulder injury. I would expect Alton Robinson to get his very first start. I don't know that he's got your chance to be like a breakout star with some of his very first snaps in the NFL, but I would sure love it if that was the case.
Third down. Jake, what style of game should Seahawks fans be prepared for against the Patriots?
The style of game that you should be prepared for. It's going to be a quick one. And what I mean by that is I think you're going to have two teams that are going to be dedicated to trying to run the football down each other's throats, that are going to be looking to establish their physicality against one another, trying to win the time of possession. I think the Seahawks hopefully will play with continue to play with great tempo. They won't completely go the other way, that they'll allow Russell Wilson to still be a tremendous factor in this game in a bunch of different ways, but I do think there's going to be a heavy run emphasis in this game, which is going to play right into what Bill Belichick, I think, is preparing for, in the sense that he wants to keep the time of possession on his side. He wants this to be a close, tight game. And when both teams are trying to put an emphasis in the run game and establish the run, you're not going to have a 3 hour plus game. This could be under 3 hours here against the Patriots and Seahawks. So that's the style of game that I'm preparing for, a physical, tough matchup.
Fourth down. Jake, who needs to step up big this week for the Seahawks to win?
Okay. I'm going to go to two sides here. Okay. I'm going to start on the defensive side of the ball. The players that have to step up big here for the Seahawks is going to be, I'm going to say it, the entire defensive line. Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayowa, Jaron Reed, Puna Ford, backups, Brian Monet. These guys have to step up and they have to come up and play big, because this is going to be a game where they need to play big. All the questions about this group, can they be better than what they were last year, which nearly gave up almost 5 yards per carry last year? They have to be better. And I think Jamal Adams and that group helps, but those guys at the defensive line have to hold their gaps and stay disciplined. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, guess what we've been talking about? Oh, they're secondary. How great they are. How great Stephon Gilmore is. And Stephon Gilmore is going to shut down one guy, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and that Bill Belichick's just going to double the other. Well, guess what? They've got more than two guys. They've got more than two guys that at their display or at their disposal to be able to use and create mismatch problems. The players that have to step up big for the Seahawks on the offensive side of the ball is going to be that tight end group. I'm talking to Greg Olsen. I'm talking to Will Disley and Jacob Hollister. You're going to have one-on-one opportunities versus linebackers versus safeties. And I think that could potentially be the X factor in this game, is how well the tight end group for the Seattle Seahawks plays this Sunday.
How's Greg Olsen as a blocking tight end?
Great. He's a great blocker. He's one of those true,
would you say,
rare
he's
tight
great
ends.
Olsen? Huh?
Gosh.
Did you hear it? Because it's Greg, but it's great instead.
I did. I have to give that to you. That's pretty good.
Can I get the horn?
No.
Now that's a bold take.
Yay!
That's the violation of the use of the horn. But it was a good one, Stacey. Now, with Greg Olsen, yeah, he's a good blocking tight end, and that's why he was such a great fit here to begin with, because he's not a liability in the running game, that him and Will Disley can really work well together. And I love the fact that they use Jacob Hollister in a bunch of different ways as well. He almost kind of lined up as a fullback a couple snaps that I saw. So don't be surprised if you really try to see the Seahawks, as I study this, Patriots defense more and more, that the tight ends could be a real factor against a group that is has really good corners.
I'm going to sneak in kind of an extra, like a fifth down here, but it's just kind of a part B of this question. What's the weakness then? The weakness then is that kind of just the front seven as a whole? Is it the way that their linebackers play against the run? I mean, what's the weakness on this defense where the tight ends in particular become a key?
So are you talking about from an offensive perspective?
From an offensive perspective. Yeah, when you're looking at okay. the Patriots defense where you're like, we can attack them here.
Because what I see is their linebacking core. Their linebacking core and their safety group. Although they have some good safeties, I think that you have dynamic enough tight ends where they can beat the safeties. They can beat linebackers. They can beat man-to-man coverage. And I think that they're going to get a whole lot of that because the New England Patriots, they love to play a lot of man-to-man. They will play zone at different times, but they love to be aggressive, playing cover one. They're going to bring the house and play cover zero from time to time, and you need your tight ends, who you have a lot of love for in Will Dissly, Greg Olsen, and Jacob Hollister, to win those matchups, and that could be a potential winning option for Russell Wilson.
Someone, 360, Stacy needs a hug. The horn for that. Great Olsen? Oh, no. I said what I said. I'll stand by it. If you missed the show, you can always listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Also, as a reminder, you guys, the Seahawks will take on the Patriots this Sunday. We already know that on 710 ESPN Seattle. So that means that you can hear the Mariners game on its entirety on 770 KTTH. Just giving you guys a heads up there. The Seahawks have their first home game of the season. Will playing without fans impact them more than other teams? Jim Moore seems to think so. I saw at least one person tweet in back at Jake for Bold Take Friday that it might be an advantage. That's coming up next in the Halftime Show.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
It is Bold Take Friday, trademark on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Jake, I'm going to be doing something I've never done before. Ever. Okay. I think I might change my bold take.
What?
I'm not backing down on it. I still believe that my bold take that Seattle secondary will get more interceptions, will outperform New England secondary, which is the best secondary in the league, at least was last year, and performed really well against the Dolphins. I'm not backing down from it, but I've decided that for funsies, I'm going to go pretty hard in the paint. I'm going to pivot away from the conversation we're having about offense. My new bold take I'm going to make, because I kind of want this to happen for fun. I want Chris Carson to have his first 100-yard rushing game of the season and two rushing touchdowns, and I want Seattle to lean into the run against New England. I know that it's what New England's expecting them to do because it's what we're all expecting them to do. I know that Russell Wilson remains their best player on offense, and there's no reason that Russell Wilson can't drastically outperform what Ryan Fitzpatrick in the Miami Dolphins did against New England last week. But I think that it is a good thing to be an offense that can be dynamic in the pass or in the run. I have no problem with them leaning into the run this week. And because I kind of want that to happen, that's going to be my prediction. First 100-yard game of the season for Carson and two rushing touchdowns.
Okay. I hear that now.
I hear you.
I also believe that. I hear that. Okay. I'm glad you got that off your chest,
because
it felt like something was just weighing you down.
It was. I feel lighter, you know?
Okay. Now, with Chris Carson getting his first 100-yard game, I think that that's probably likely here with the fact that I believe the conversation all week long has been, hey, that was cool against Atlanta, but it's week to week. Mm-hmm. Hey, Russell Wilson, I just want to win football games. Hey, we're going to be week to week. We want to, Pete Carroll saying, well, immediately after the Atlanta game, I want the running backs to get more carries. I think we're going to see a heavy dose of that. And here's the upside of that, Stacy.
Okay.
Is though, although I'm not fully on board with them going, hey, we're going to go 40 carries, we're going to try to rush for almost 300 yards on the ground.
Hey, not 40 for Carson. What about like 30?
No, there's Carlos Hyde
get
too.
Get 10 I mean, for I Hyde.
I think between him and Carlos Hyde, they'll definitely rack it up. But I think that if you do that, you're going to be so difficult to stop. And it's going to be extremely hard for defenses and defensive coordinators around the league as you prepare for the Seahawks, because you're not going to know what to do. It's like pick your poison, right? Do we want to sit back in coverage and try and play conservative because we don't want Russell Wilson to beat us? Or do we want to get, you know, absolutely pounded in the ground game by Chris Carson, this offensive line, and Carlos Hyde? So that, I believe, could be one advantage of them doing this week and winning if it ends up working. But don't get away from your star player and the guy who makes your offense truly dynamic altogether.
No, but lean into your other star, your shining star, Chris Carson. I'm going to keep doing this thing where I agree and I go, right, no, exactly. And also lean into Chris Carson. Jake, what was yours?
My bold take was, although it's the greatest weakness of this team and it's the greatest fear that I have in terms of the defensive line being able to stop the New England running attack, as Mike Salk put it, that he thought this could be a reckless take. No, I think this is a bold take because I think it's going to happen. I think the Seahawks, knowing that the Patriots are going to want to come in and ground and pound, I think that they're going to be able to keep the Patriots running game under 100 yards rushing, because this offense right now is really one-dimensional.
What?
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Get it.
DJ, come on. Come on. Now, I would
sound
like to...
Sound the horn, DJ.
No, I'd like to revisit this for just a minute. First of all of New England scores last week were rushing touchdowns. All 21 points were on the ground, two from Cam Newton, one from Sony Michel. Cam Newton had 75, I believe, yards on the ground. Sony Michel had, I don't know, like 30. I can't remember, but that's bold. Is it? I agree with Salk. Is it reckless, Jake? Is it reckless?
I don't think it's reckless.
Okay.
I don't think it's reckless because if you look at this defense for the Seahawks, yes, their strength is in their secondary, but they have playmakers. Why did they bring Jamal Adams in? Because he's a playmaker, not just in the passing game, but in the running game around the line of scrimmage. Bobby Wagner had a great game last week. You have corners that can play very solid in the run game. I think that they're not strong with their weaponry on the outside, which then leads you to be a little bit more aggressive than you normally would in terms of loading the box against this New England Patriots offense. So it's going to be up to the Patriots to really try to establish a run game versus heavy, heavy box looks against the Seahawks.
Our second story of the day. Jim Moore of Bob David Moore says that the Seahawks will be impacted potentially more than any other team with the lack of crowd noise. He has an article up for 710sports.com. I'm going to start by saying I absolutely adore the way that Jim writes. It is all train of thought, and I love it. He is such a fun read every single time. I recommend that you check out his articles. If you agree with him or not, they're always fun to read. But now we get into the second part of this. Do you agree with him? I personally don't. I think that Seahawks fans obviously make a difference. The 12th man has a reputation for a reason. But I think that the teams that are impacted more by a lack of crowd noise are going to be the bad teams.
Okay. I see how you get to that point for you know, the Seahawks. They have a better opportunity to communicate. But one thing that I will say, Stacey, is that this team and this connection between their fan base is real and genuine. And I know that they love feeding off of the energy of the crowd, and it has created special, special moments here in the past. And I think that, you know, this year would have been no exception to that. So it would have been absolutely fun. Sunday night football, have this place rocking, and it'll be weird to see it empty in a primetime game. And we'll see how they're able to overcome. But I think when you talk about this group, they are resilient. I think they're doing a great job adapting. And one of the things I was worried about, Stacey, was how are these players going to get themselves amped up and ready to go? You know, there's just something about the crowd around you that just kind of heightens the moment. And the Seahawks players and coaches have said that they were really impressed with how everybody reacted, how they were able to bring the energy and get everybody pumped up. And I think that they'll be able to do it again, knowing that they have a big opportunity this Sunday night.
Obviously, I encourage you guys to send in your bold takes. Make them bold. Make them really bold, potentially even reckless. You can text those in to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Jake also has a tweet going. You can respond to that Twitter thread. It's at JTHeaps9. Go to his account. It's like the first tweet he has up there. You can respond to that. Seeing a couple on here, one person says, Lockett and Metcalf each going to have 100 yards receiving and a touchdown. That is bold. I think that's a bold prediction. 200 yards combined from your top two receivers. I mean, that's without yardage from any of your other receivers or tight ends. What do you think about that, Jake?
Yeah, it is pretty bold in the sense that Bill Belichick, what he does the best more than any other defensive coach is taking away your best players. I mean, truly being able to game plan. And he is fortunate enough to have one of the best chess pieces in the game, and that is Stephon Gilmore, because he does a great job of locking down a particular player for that given week. I don't know who he's going to call on for Gilmore to cover, whether it's Tyler Lockett or it's DK Metcalf. My feeling, if I just had to go with my gut reaction, I think it's DK Metcalf. But he does a great job in those situations. So to see Tyler Lockett and DK both have over 100 yards, man, they would be having dominant performances.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break from the Seahawks. I know everyone is excited for this Sunday night game. We're going to get back to it. We've got some sound from Brian Schottenheimer yesterday. We've got injury updates. We also have Pete Carroll giving his final practice report coming up at 2 p.m. But first, coming up next in the timeline, we're going to talk about the Pac-12 potentially returning to play here. That's up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome in to The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timelines. If you see any you ever want us to include, please tag us. We'll try to include them. At Stacey Rost, at JT Heaps, at Tom Wassel, JT Heaps 9. At Tom Wassel. Again, that's all on Twitter. So I'm going to get started taking a look at the Pac-12 here. We already know that the Big Ten is going to aim to resume play the weekend of October 24th, and they're going to play 8 games in 8 weeks leading up to their own Big Ten championship game. Well, now, according to John Wilner, of the Mercury News, the Pac-12 is going to follow suit. So according to Wilner, there are 3 primary hurdles to clear in order to resume play on the weekend of October 31st. That's the reported weekend when they want to start. It's the weekend after the Big Ten starts up. So those 3 primary hurdles are 1, local health restrictions, 2, approval from the CEOs and, you know, the administrations, blah, blah, blah. 3, reaching consensus in regards to training camp schedules. Jake, I don't know that I'm like angry or even fired up from any of this. It just seems like something I was expecting. Like, again, I'm a graduate of a
really?
Pac-12 school. I'm a fan of a Pac-12 school. I kind of expected the Pac-12 to follow suit with the Big Ten, and then the second the Big Ten came back to be like, oh, us too. That's also what we're going to be doing. Like, none of this is shocking to me. I mean, it feels like the Pac-12 is just kind of, you know, waiting to see what other people around it are going to do. Maybe this is just the job of being a commissioner or any Power 5 conference. Like, maybe if, you know, the table was turned and it was the SEC, which I doubt, but say that it was the SEC looking at the ACC or that someone else would be doing a similar thing. But, like, I'm not surprised by any of this. And maybe because of that, because I've lost hope that the Pac-12 is under strong leadership, none of this makes me mad. I'm just like, all right, well, here we go. I mean, maybe football October 31st, Halloween weekend. I guess that's what we're waiting for now. But you seem incredibly upset.
Well, I am, Stacey. First, I want to say that I'm excited that hopefully that this is the route that they take, that there will be Pac-12 football being played, that the Big Ten is now coming into the conversation, that they will play. I think so many of these players, these coaches, the people that are involved in those programs, I'm very happy for them. I'm very happy that they get a chance to play and play the game that they love and hopefully do it in a timeline that won't completely alter their career and potentially their livelihood. Okay, so that's one thing that I am happy about. But can we just talk about this for a second in
we
a
literally
way that
can.
I'm just trying to figure out what the heck they're doing.
Yeah.
Is the Pac-12 in a position now, which is very clear, that they're not leaders. They're not the conference of champions that they can, you know, pound their chest and say, look how great of a conference we are. No, you're a follower. You're a conference that follows because you're essentially becoming more and more irrelevant from the conversation from a football standpoint. The decision in terms of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to sit out, Stacey, it was all relative to this conversation about, you know, myocarditis, right?
Mm-hmm.
This underlying heart condition, which is very, you know, real. It's a real situation, and I don't discredit that by any bit. But either that's really what you're worried about, or it's not, because in my opinion, just because, you know, COVID-19 testing has come back and it's more readily available and they have quicker protocols, doesn't all of a sudden escape the fact that players who contract it could potentially get myocarditis. So was that really the issue all along or not? And I'm trying to weigh that out here, Stacey, and I'm having a really hard time trying to see where their reasoning is, because just because they have rapid testing now doesn't all of a sudden change that worry or concern that
right.
they originally said that they had. Was it real or not?
And that's a fair point, because that is correct. One of the things that did change that was not in place when they made this decision is their partnership with a lab that can provide them with daily rapid testing. That is something that's changed. But as far as we know, the underlying kind of knowledge that we have, the very limited knowledge about the impact of COVID on myocarditis, and to be fair, there was at least enough evidence that they felt confident saying this, enough evidence to show that in instances of COVID, the chances of getting myocarditis increased more so than any other coronavirus. Okay. So got it. Check. This all makes sense. But then why go back on that? And again, I love college football. I am happy for these athletes, should they choose to play, that they get a chance to play again. It is hard not to look at the NCAA and the Pac-12, the NCAA being an institution that I just kind of inherently distrust, and not believe that this is all from either outside pressure or this idea of not wanting to lose more money. Like, I don't completely buy that what has changed is just, oh, now we have more knowledge and we have daily testing and we're confident. Then why make the decision in the first place? Why not say like, hey, we're going to pause for a minute, but you made the decision to announce that you were postponing until like January at the earliest, and then that's slowly been moved up. So
right.
It just ends up looking sloppy. And don't get me wrong, like, should this happen, should there be a return of fall sports, and should you have football kicking off Halloween weekend, I'll be watching. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be excited about it, but it feels
of course, yeah.
like all of it was made. The decisions were made on such shaky ground. And the thing that I care about most, that everyone should care about most, is the health and safety of the players. And I guess I don't trust that was always front and center.
Correct. And that's where I struggle with this conversation, Stacey, because to me, I can't help, right? I can't help but think that this conversation had more to do with, you know, political reasons or, you know, a progressive view of things than saying what the actual issue was, right? If it is myocarditis, if it is a lack of rapid testing, okay, I'm fine with that and things change. But with myocarditis, that issue hasn't gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reasoning for why the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, that was their main reason. And so I just can't help to think those things, Stacey. And it's frustrating because these players who have been geared up and they've been trying to do things the right way, UW, they had a very minor amount of people being tested positive for COVID. They did an excellent job. There were so many of these student athletes that were doing a great job. The coaching staffs, the support staffs, they were doing excellent work in that regard. And then they had their season taken away, and now they all had to go home. They didn't know when their season was going to be, right? So there's just all this change for these players, and I don't understand why now all of a sudden it's okay, and that these players have lost out on multiple weeks of a normal start, just like they've watched everybody else from the SEC, ACC, Big 12. I just can't help but sit there and think that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are looking at these other conferences playing successfully and going, man, yeah, we're missing out and we need to change things.
All right, I'm going to give you guys a very quick Seahawks injury update, and then I've got one more story for the timeline. Injury report here brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. The Seahawks final injury report of the week is out. Rasheem Green is doubtful with a neck injury. Cedric Abuehi, offensive lineman, also doubtful with a pectoral injury. Philip Dorsett is questionable with a foot injury, similarly to last week. I think we'll remain to see whether or not he'll play. We'll get the inactives list 90 minutes before kickoff Sunday night. If Rasheem Green doesn't play, I would then expect rookie Alton Robinson to get his very first call to start or call to play in the NFL. Second story I want to hit really, really quickly here. Brian Schottenheimer the other day in a press conference said that Russell Wilson and he know each other so well that now Russ doesn't hesitate to call him out about bad plays.
Russ and I have the type of relationship now where he can come to me and really say whatever he wants to me in terms of, hey, I think that was a call, or hey, I think that was a great call, or hey, I want to do more of this. And I don't feel like he's being pushy. He's just giving me his thoughts and ideas.
Not a bad, I don't mind that. I think that's fine.
I love it. And here's what I love, and I hope people really appreciate about Brian Schottenheimer, is that this guy is confident in who he is. He's confident in what he does, but he doesn't have an ego. He genuinely doesn't. And I think for a player and a coach to have that relationship and to feel close like that and to be able to have the communication back and forth one way or the other. And further along, Shotty said, hey, if I don't like something that Russ is telling me or that he's suggesting that we need to do, I feel comfortable with him to say, hey, I don't see it that way. We're not doing that. And for Russell to respect me in the same fashion. So, like I've said before and mentioned before and outlined before, Stacey, is that this relationship between Russell Wilson and Brian Schottenheimer growing into year three, this is why I believe that this offense has the capability of producing its best results. Yes, Russell cooking, but that this offense as a whole is great. And that they can beat you in a variety of different ways.
All right, we will be taking a caller for our NFL picks coming up here in the 2 p.m. hour. Hang on to this number, 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. We're going to take you to Pete Carroll's presser next, though. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.